Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Gregory Crawford on Basketball Show. We do this show every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Pacific time. And I know usually the last Tuesday of the month we talk with Scott Aker. He is our PIL, Portland Interscholastic League expert. But Scott had a game tonight, so we're moving him to the second Wednesday of each month, and he'll be with us year-round. Scott Aker does a great job. Of course, the PIL is very dear to my heart. It's where I cut my teeth at basketball in Cleveland High School. We love it. We're going to promote it a lot on here. We'll do that the second Wednesday of each month. But we want to always have a special guest on here. And by the way, I am Gregory Crawford. You can follow me on Twitter at WC Hoops or at www.gregorycrawfordsports.wordpress.com, where I talk about basketball, sports, business, golf, and my world-famous power rankings. But in our great move to always have a very special guest on this program, we have one tonight. I love talking basketball with this guy. He's fabulous. He knows the game inside and out, and he's a tremendous human being. The associate head coach at Portland State University on the men's team, Jeff Hironaka. Jeff, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Greg. How are you doing?
Very good. Happy New Year to you and to all our great listeners. And, Jeff, it's a time of year that I think is always a time when basketball coaches on all levels are pretty darn busy because league play's starting. You still got to recruit. You still got to break down film, and you still got to have practices that are so meaningful because league play is so important.
Yeah, you know, it's we finished the preseason. Obviously, I wish we were a little bit better in the preseason, but on the positive, I guess we, other than the Wazoo game, I think we were in most games. So hopefully yesterday we took some strides forward with a nice win against Cal State Fullerton at home, and I hope that will propel us into league play Saturday night versus Sac State at their place, or at our place, excuse me, and I hope that we can get off on the right foot in Big Sky Conference play, so we'll see. But, yeah, I was just at a Clark game tonight watching Clark play Lower Columbia. It was actually a great game. Lower Columbia won it basically with about 1 second to go. The guy took it 94 feet with about 3 seconds to go, got to the cup and got fouled and an and one, and then hit the free throw to win the game for him. So it was a pretty exciting game.
Oh, yeah, that is really exciting. And, you know, speaking of Lower Columbia and Clark, in general, you know, there might not be a lot of Division One players. You know, who knows how people blossom, but the NWAC is a tremendous community college league, and it really gives a lot of young people, men and women, just sometimes, in some cases, a second chance and a chance to move on to a four-year school.
Yeah, you know, the NWAC, it hasn't had a lot of Division One talent, but it's got a lot of good talent. If I was a small college coach in the area or even not in the area, I would recruit the NWAC fairly hard because they've got good players. A lot of them don't have a lot of size, so they've all got between 6'4 and 6'5 posts, but small college level, you can get away with some of those guys, and they're pretty tough. I mean, we played a kid from Multnomah. I think he was about 6'5, probably 260, and I mean, he kicked our behind the night we played them at our place. So there are some good kids in the NWAC, and yeah, they're looking for that opportunity to get a chance to hopefully secure a scholarship or go somewhere where they can get a good education and continue to play ball. So it's a good opportunity for a lot of kids in the area and out of the area to have a chance to go enjoy some ball for a couple more years, and then if it works out that they can go on to a four-year school, great. If not, then a lot of them probably just go on to a four-year school and go to school. But it's a great opportunity for all those kids.
Jeff, you know, speaking of the height of the big people in the NWAC, where have all the big men gone in basketball? It's hard to find 6'10", 6'11", 7-foot players that can play anymore. And if you get one, that person's probably going to be pretty special.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, you know, there's really not many true post guys anymore. There are a lot of kids that are, you know, 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", but they're all, most of them are face-up players, and they're not much back-to-the-basket guys. But, you know, I think that's the way the game has changed a lot, with a lot of more pick-and-rolls and pick-and-pops and, you know, the emphasis in spreading the floor out, because now it's basically a guards game where you drive to the basket. You want to open up that middle a little bit more, so you don't want a big guy down there squatting down there, clogging it up. So it is, the game has definitely changed, and, you know, the big guys are just a little bit different. But anybody who's got a great low post player, I think they'd say, hey, we'd love to have them. But like I said, they're few and far between, and we are, even ourselves right now, we're looking for a potential wide body ourselves. And like I said, there's just not a lot out there. I do think the national JUCOs have a little more choice in big guys, because obviously they're all getting scholarships, and it's a little bit bigger situation for them. But, you know, in the NWAC, I think, you know, they're just not that many. But, you know, we've got to scour everywhere and see if we can find one. And if we do and you get a good one, you're very fortunate.
Jeff, in your expert opinion, you mentioned about the way the game changes and everything. What changes the game? What has the most influence on the game, in your opinion? Is it professional basketball? Is it a coach that's had success? Is it a player that, you know, in professional basketball, all of the above? Or what changes the game? Because it's constantly evolving.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, obviously, the NBA has a big influence, and the NBA is pretty much a lot of two-man games where the guy with the ball and the guy coming to set this ball screen, that's a lot of that action. But I also think trends that go on. I know back, you know, probably 8 to 10 years ago, a guy named Vance Wahlberg brought in the dribble-drive offense, and before you know it, you know, he had some good success, and the next thing you know, everybody wants to run dribble-drive. And, you know, way back in the day when the Princeton offense became popular, then, you know, guys wanted to try the Princeton offense. And so I think it's just, if there's somebody has some success with something, then we all steal from somebody else, and we all want to give it a shot. And so I think that's just kind of what the trend is whatever is working right now, everybody seems to go that direction. And right now it's basically a lot of pick and roll, a lot of spread the floor, a lot of attack the basket. And will it change? I don't know, but you know, it seems like right now the game is, you know, just spread it out and go. And I do think it's the NBA has influenced that. And now with the 30 second shot clock, you don't have as much time to come down and run basically a continuity offense for as long as you used to be able to do. And therefore a lot of teams are now just going to quick hit plays, lots of sets, and, you know, try to see if they can get something out of there. So it's definitely, the game is definitely evolving as rule changes are made and as coaches have success in whatever they happen to do.
Jeff, you have a tremendous relationship with Coach Kevin. You're his associate head coach, as does Coach Coburn and Coach Plank. You guys work great together, obviously. But let me ask you this on a timeout. I think our listeners, and, boy, we've got a ton of listeners tonight. We've got a huge audience. I think they'd kind of like to know, say it's a normal timeout. By normal, I mean, score is tied and nothing really bad is happening out there. What is your role in that timeout?
You know, you're always thinking about the next play. I mean, myself, I guess I'm thinking about the next play, whether it's an offensive deal or defensive deal, probably more offensively oriented for myself, since that's where most of my input is coming from, the offensive side. Jace is giving some input on the defensive side. So, again, you're worrying about the next possession and whether you're on the defensive side, what can we do to maybe, you know, surprise the other team, either on offense or defense. And if something's been working, you know, do we go back to it? You know, you just don't know. It's for us, it's about what's been working and what have we been successful at. And, you know, if you execute the play, I don't care if the other team knows it, you're still going to get something good out of it. So the way I look at that is if you can run a play and it works, it'll work in the next time too. It may not work. You may not have the same option, but it's still going to work because you've got other options to it. And so, like, for myself, like I said, I'm just looking for the next play, next offensive play. Where can we go down? Because coming out of a timeout, obviously you'd like to get a good shot or at least, you know, maybe get a score. So if you can get a good shot and score, that's the ideal scenario for you. And that's kind of what I'm looking for, what I'm trying to give Coach Gibbs some input about to see what maybe will, you know, will work and give us that edge to, you know, because every possession becomes valuable down the stretch. So you can't waste possessions, and you've got to make sure that you're organized both offensively and defensively to where you don't waste those possessions.
You know, kind of a two-parter here in regard to timeouts. We all know that timeouts probably not going to change the way the structure is because it had some changes this year. Do we have too many timeouts in a basketball game, in your personal opinion, Jeff? And the second part of that is a time, the game being overcoached.
You know, you're asking probably the wrong guy on that one, but I think the timeouts, when we didn't have all the media timeouts, when you had five timeouts, you know, whether it was, I think in the old days you had five timeouts. They weren't 30-second timeouts. They weren't whatever. I kind of like that format where you just had the five timeouts, you take them and use them at your leisure. Now, like I said, every 4 minutes you've got a timeout. And I'm not a big fan of the 30-second timeout because in 30 seconds it's difficult always to – by the time you get the guys over to the bench, you've already used 10 seconds of that 30-second timeout. So you really got to be organized and know what you want to do because you've only got about 10, 15 seconds to tell them, hey, this is what you want to do. So I'm not a big fan of the 30-second timeout. I wish we just had the old – five timeouts, use them as you want, and no media timeouts. But due to TV and, you know, money, that is what it is. I mean, you got to make those, you got to have those timeouts. So, and is the game overcoached? I think it could be, but I think that's all based on your personnel, what type of players you have. If you've got fairly smart players where you know that they can pick up things and can organize and do things, then I don't think you can overcoach those guys. I think if you have athletes who maybe haven't been used to structure so much and you try to keep feeding them, you know, sets and whatever, and they could struggle a little bit because their mind doesn't think the same way all the time. They play on instinct more than going from A to B to C. And that's probably where I struggle the most because I've been used to having guys who can execute, and we've had more athletes, at least at PSU, to where you can't quite do the same thing. So in some ways, have we overcoached them at PSU at times? Probably so. But as a coach, you're always looking for that edge to try to win that game. So sometimes we maybe do overcoach because we think, hey, this will work against so-and-so, and so we got to make sure we get that in there before we play him, or even during the timeout, hey, we got to try this because, you know, they won't be expecting it or whatever. And sometimes it works, and a lot of times it doesn't because the kids just don't quite grasp it quick enough.
What caused you to become a basketball coach? When did you first start thinking, this is one I want to do? Because you have a long history in the game, a successful history. What got it started?
Well, after I graduated from high school, I like I said, I went to college at Utah State University my first year, and of course I wasn't good enough to play there. And after the year, I decided, hey, I want to try to play, so I transferred to Eastern Oregon College, which is now Eastern Oregon University. And I was on the team there, and, you know, I really, again, not a great player. I was a good high school player, but even at a small college like that, I didn't have all the tools to be, you know, what you would call one of the prime time players. So literally sat the bench a lot, just sat there, watched the game, and watched how the coach coached and watched how other coaches coached and tried to be observant of the game as it was going on because I had the best seat in the house. And after a couple years of sitting the bench, I just kind of thought, you know, maybe this would be fun and maybe this would be something I want to do. So I was going to be an education major and going to be a teacher anyhow, and so that's kind of where I thought, well, you know, it'd kind of be fun to coach basketball in particular. I coached a couple other sports, but basketball was the one, obviously, that I loved the most. So that's kind of how it all started.
Jeff, did they ever, I've never asked you this question, known you a long time. Did they ever talk much about Coach Wilson at Eastern Oregon, who, for people out there that need to really look up his record, the great Ted Wilson, who was so successful at Linfield, put Linfield basketball on the map, and it's never been the same since. Went to Eastern Oregon, well ahead of you, I might add, but he had quite a history in basketball.
Yeah, I remember him, obviously, and you know, while I was there, we didn't hear much about him. My coach was a guy named Lee Insko, and he actually was the football coach and then became the basketball coach while he was the football coach. But I never knew that Coach Wilson was an Eastern grad. It never came up, honestly, while I was there. But Eastern wasn't the hotbed of basketball either, don't get me wrong. We were on the bottom end, but we were definitely not in the top end of the conference at that time. So I went there because I thought, you know, maybe I have a chance to play because they just weren't that good. So that's the reason I went there. And it was within a couple hours of home. So if I wanted to go home, I had that opportunity. And, you know, I thought, well, it serves its purpose. And actually at the time, it was a pretty good school for teachers. So all that combined, I thought that's where I'd want to go. But no, we did not know much. I did not know much about Coach Wilson other than that he was at Linfield.
Very good. We're speaking with Jeff Hironaki as the associate head coach at Portland State University under Tyler Geving. Does a fabulous job. Not only that, but just being a great part of the for so many years. And speaking of all those years, Jeff, a lot of people right away say officiating. Officiating's changed dramatically. You get a lot of guys now, they're not intimidated. They're not intimidated by the home crowd and everything. But why is it still so hard for teams to win on the road in basketball?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, when you're, and again, it's hard to say, you know, you're at home, you've got a certain pattern, you know, you kind of do the routine is the same. When you go on the road, you're either getting up early or, you know, the travel is a killer where you've got to go to maybe a couple airports or you got to delay and then you got to, you know, at least for us this year, we've had some bad luck. We've had two bus trips once we got from the airport to the bus, and both times the buses broke down. So there's always some things that happen to go wrong. And then, like I said, you know, it's just officials, obviously, I think, I don't think they necessarily do it, but I think in the back of their mind, they just, you know, whether it's whoever's the home team, they obviously, I don't know, I don't think they favor it, but I think if there's a close call, they kind of lean to go to the home team sometime, not all the time. And I think officials, you know, they're not as patient in terms of listening to your argument. And yet, you know, when I was a head coach, I very rarely yelled at the officials. And the reason I did that is because obviously you've got to pick your poison. You've got to pick the times that are best to argue. And you want to make sure when you do argue, you have a legitimate gripe. And I think if you do that, then they'll at least listen and you know, maybe give it some thought. But if you, you know, continually try to get every call, it's just like a kid, they're going to eventually just shut it out. And And then I think in that case, toward the end of the game, if you rode them the whole game, I don't think you're going to get many calls down the stretch. So, you know, it's a tough job for them, and it's a tough job for the coach, because the coach wants to win. And, you know, it's frustrating if he feels like he's not getting the call, but in reality, they're human beings. They're going to make mistakes. They're never going to be right all the time. And, you know, you got to live with it some of the time. And like I said, just pick your poison. If when it's a good time to jump on them a little bit.
Jeff, in our 9 minutes are left, I'm going to ask you about Sac State, the Portland State opponent on Saturday night in the Stott Center at home. But before I do that, I'm going to make you the czar of basketball. You are the czar of basketball for the next minute or two, and you only get one thing that you would change about the game. One thing. What would that be?
Ooh, one thing. I would put the 5 second count back in on the dribble. And the only reason I do that, because I just think that by not doing that, one guy can hold the ball for the whole 30 seconds or 25 seconds and make a play. And I'm not big into that. I'm big into moving the ball, sharing the ball, keeping your spacing, and not, you know, because when everybody's not involved in the game, if I'm one of the four players that never touched the ball, I think when I do touch the ball, my instincts are, well, I better try to do something because I may never touch it again. So I'd prefer that they bring that back in. I doubt if they will, but I wish they'd bring the five-second call back in. I know this is the first year they're doing it, but I just think that makes the game more individualistic than team-oriented by just letting the guy hold on to it for the whole time.
Very good, very good. As I mentioned, Saturday night, the home opener of league play. You're playing your travel partner, Sacramento State Hornets. I love that nickname, by the way, one of the great ones in all of sports, Hornets. Pretty darn good. And they're good. And the other thing is, they really stuck with Coach Katz there and continued the continuity of that program, and it's obviously paid off because they are a dangerous team in the Big Sky, both home and on the road. And they got a lot of taste of winning on the road the last couple of years. They got to have some confidence.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I'm not sure how many years he's been there now, but I know when he first took the job, he came from San Joaquin Delta Junior College, and I think philosophically he thought that you know, taking a lot of transfer kids was the way to go, who'd already played college basketball. And so I know his first 4 or 5 years, I think he really took a lot of transfer and JUCO guys and found out that maybe that wasn't the way to go. And I've noticed, obviously, in the past 5 years, he's taken a couple JUCO guys, but the majority of the guys he get are high school kids who he's done a really good job of developing. They've been introduced to the system. So, you know, even though they lost two very good guards last year in McKinney and Garrity, the guys that were sitting on the bench that weren't playing as many minutes knew the system, and, you know, they may not be quite as good as they were a year ago, but because those guys have been in the system and they know the system well and can run the system, I think that's why they've had, you know, good success. And so they're going to be a formidable opponent for us, you know, because they do run their system. They run it well, and all those kids know their roles, and they accept their roles, and it'll be a tough game for us. So I hope that we can come out with a little energy and try to blow up what they like to do offensively, and hopefully we can exploit them offensively also on our end. But, you know, it's not going to be an easy game. I wish it was, but it's not going to be an easy game. We're going to have to be well prepared to give it a go.
And like every league, Jeff, I would imagine you'd agree with me on this, but you don't have to. You better protect your home court or you're not going to have success in the league.
yeah, you've got to protect the home court unless you're just a phenomenal road team and you can win all your road games, then you're in pretty good shape. But, no, I think the Big Sky is a tough travel league, and, you know, there's no easy – actually, Sac State's probably the easiest trip because you just fly into Sacramento and you're right there. All the other ones, you fly somewhere and then you got to drive somewhere, so it's a tough get. But, and I think that's why the conference is so tough. That's why I do think you've got to protect your home court. And, you know, if you can win all your home games and say 50% of your road games, you're probably going to win the league. And, you know, but, you know, start Saturday night, we got to see if we can protect our own home court and get off to a good start. And then, you know, the next week we go on the road. So it won't be an easy task there, but we definitely got to try to protect the home court Saturday night.
Jeff, Happy New Year to you. I'm humbled and honored to know you and have you as a friend, and I appreciate not only your basketball knowledge, but just the fact you're a tremendous human being, and I know the basketball community thinks the same thing and people outside of it the same thing. So I'll see you Saturday night, and we got a big one, the home opener for league play. It'll be exciting. It'll be fun. And people need to get there, and I'll talk to you on Saturday night.
All right, great. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You betcha. That's Jeff Hironaka, the associate coach, head coach at Portland State University under Tyler Geving. They got a great staff there with Jace Coburn, Michael Plank, Coach Hironaka, and Tyler Geving do a wonderful job. Hey, everybody, next time we talk to you, it'll be 2016. Have a great and safe new year. And thanks for being a big part of this program by being a listener and making it work. And don't forget, you don't have to listen live. You can always pick up the podcast on this, which is there forever. Good night, everyone. Happy New Year. And we'll talk to you the next time in 2016. That's a little scary, but it's got to happen. You can't stop time. Good night. Don't forget to make your free throws.